Ann Stevens.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fine. Ann, thanks very much for joining me for this conversation this morning on women's leadership. And I want to introduce you as not only a friend from our auto industry days of working together, but today as the chairman, president, and CEO of Carpenter Technology, Inc., which is a manufacturer of specialized alloys. But also, you were named, I know, by Fortune magazine to its very prestigious list of most influential, powerful women in business a number of years ago when you were the COO of the Americas for Ford Motor Company. Right?
That is correct.
All right. Well, I know you are passionate about and have been a long-time active participant and advocate for women's leadership. So let's begin by asking, where do you see us today in the United States in terms of women moving from achievers to genuine leaders in shaping this nation?
I would say very slow progress. You know, by this point in time, I know when I first entered the workplace, the excuse was there's no pipeline. There's no pipeline. There aren't women in the pipeline. How can women advance if there are no women in the pipeline? Today's situation, there have been women in the pipeline for at least 20 years, but it's not really pulling people through to the percentage levels that I would have expected with leading companies, with women on boards, with women in high political offices. So, you know, if you look 20 years ago versus today, there's some slow improvement in the statistics, but we almost seem to be idled at a certain level without more women accelerating and breaking through. So it's a frustrating place to be.
Yes. And what's your sense as you pay attention to this and observe it over the past couple of decades of why are we idling?
I think, you know, why we're idling is partially because women leak from the pipeline and don't go after those top positions. And some of it is women look at what it takes to get the positions and basically opt out. And it's not that women opt out of the workplace. They start their own businesses. They do other things. They're still working. They're still earning money. But it's these quote-unquote high-powered power positions that don't seem to have the appeal that I would have hoped that they would have had, you know, 20 years ago when we were all looking at it and basically saying we wanted to achieve it.
Right. But there's plenty of, as you said, women achievers, and so certainly the opt-out piece of it that's related to frustration and the complexities of the demands on their lives, all those things. But do you think there's some being pushed out or just sort of ignored or stalled by the cultures and the organizations that's still a major piece of this?
Yeah, I think what I'm saying, and it sounds like what you're saying, and we're coding in a different way, is that there is still sexism out there, be it overt or be it covert. And the biggest example that comes to my mind most recently is the political campaign and how, you know, whether you're Democrat, Independent, or Republican, I think it was consistent that both Hillary and Sarah Palin were not really treated properly by the press. And I look at some of the gaffes that Biden made or the gaffes that Obama made or some questions on backgrounds of any of the other candidates versus how it played for them versus how it played for the women. It just seemed to me to be more biting, more discrediting, and more brutal towards the women than the men. So we can say that was in the public domain for all of us to look at, and if it's going on in the public domain, the same thing is going on at a different level within companies, within boards, within universities. So there's this overt and covert sexism that I think is still subtly out there, and one could say that the campaign wasn't so subtle, but there's still these subtle tactics that, you know, women look at and have the skills and the competencies, but just at some point in time say, this is not worth it. And it holds, and they just opt out. They leak out of the pipeline, not because they can't do the jobs, not because they don't have the experience or the brains. It's just not worth the stress or the compromise and the value system, whatever you want to call it. So I think there's still some sort of sexism out there, Anne. And, you know, actually, if you had asked me 10 years ago, I would have said it's dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just more covert.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So the next question related to that is, why does it matter? I mean, why is it important for women to be proportionately or significantly represented at the leadership heads of the tables of influence in every arena that shapes our culture, shapes our organization, shapes the direction of our nation?
I'll give you my personal point of view on that, and I think it's important for two reasons. The first is because I think at the end of the day, women do a better job than men at focusing what is important to the stakeholders in the organization. And women look less to politically compromise and keep political constituencies satisfied and make suboptimum decisions than men. I have seen it in every job I've done, in every place I've worked.
Is so that just how they're hardwired, men and women? I mean, why is that?
It's something that I see, and I think maybe it is hardwiring. I don't know. And obviously, you can never say all women. You can never say no men. But I'm just basically saying there is a big tendency for that. The second thing that goes along with that is if something does not come out as optimally as it should, women tend to process it differently than men, and they tend to look more for plan, do, check, adjust, why did it go wrong, what could I, the team, what could have we done better to achieve the goal. Men tend to look for who to blame first, to protect themselves versus how could I better have achieved the goal. So that's one side of it. The other side of it that I see, women will push very hard. I know I push very hard, and you know I describe my style as push, push, hug, although I tend to push more than I hug. But at the end of the day, you know, I still recognize that people are human beings, and pushing hard for performance, you know, doesn't mean that you don't care about people as people, but, you know, people still have to achieve. So, you know, I protect the human spirit while I'll help and demand for performance. I tend to see men protect egos more than the human spirit.
What's the difference there?
You know, I think the human spirit goes into the core of the person. And, you know, I think the ego, you go back to the three pieces of who I am, who I want you to think I am, and who I want to be. So, you know, I think the ego structure gets more convoluted with the external image and saving face.
And I'm sensing that you don't believe that women should by themselves take over and run the world, but that there's some balance here, that when you get male and female strengths and priorities or values working together, that it comes out with a stronger outcome.
Well, yes and no. I clearly believe that there should be more women in more high-powered positions. You know, it was very nice to have our first African American president, but I'll honestly tell you, I would have been much happier to see a woman president or a woman vice president win the election.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, great for the African Americans, well-deserved, long time coming, but disappointed that a woman has not yet achieved that place in America. I think there should be more women governors, I think there should be more CEOs, and I think boards should have more women. So, you know, the numbers need to be more than they are today for balance, but do I think everything, and should it be 60% women? No, I'm not suggesting that, but the numbers are still too low, and women are still leaking from the pipeline.
Yeah, for 51% of the population.
Right.
And also, one thing you didn't mention, but I'm interested in why women's leadership matters in terms of really outcomes that than the results, and some of that may be the values and the kinds of things that women make sure get addressed and get attention. You know, whether it's, you know, making sure that, you know, the national health services are including women in research for heart disease, or whether it's women having power in terms of how relief supplies are distributed in United Nations countries that are getting food help. There's many, many issues related to values. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing that, you know, I agree with, there are particular needs as well as when you look at developing countries. And, you know, it's women in those countries that provide the food and really take care of the people. And there need to be more women in leadership roles in those countries as well. In some of those countries, women are held back even more than in the developed countries in the Western world.
Yeah. Okay, and let's move on to, I have given you a list of 8 essential skills that from my research and many, many interviews, I've really compiled to teach women what are, let's say, the next skills that women achievers need to develop to move up to leadership positions. Are there any on this list that you have in front of you that kind of jump out at you?
Yeah, there's the one thing that I don't know how we get across to women. One of the things on your list, you talk about never eliminating yourself, but and there's another one on the list where you talk about imagine the possibilities, but how do we get women to want the position and to stick with it and go for it and don't give up? Because, like I say, you know, women will opt out and go do something different. How do we once again get the spirit to want the positions? That is missing for me on the list.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot of things that are required. Like, I love never eliminate yourself because, you know, two things is sometimes women can be their own worst critics. And many times if there are 10 candidates and a woman is critical on herself, she'll eliminate herself from contention.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
The other thing is women don't tend to market themselves. Or women, if you're asked what's your weakness, a woman will tend to be honest and answer the question versus a guy who has no weakness, which, you know, so I like the never eliminate yourself, but it's, you know, have the courage to go forward and want it.
It's that aspiring
right.
to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, if I kind of look back to our generation and, you know, when we had the courage to really go for what we wanted to achieve and fulfill our capabilities and our dreams and our desires, it was something we wanted.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that people want it today.
Mm-hmm. That there's not enough women who want the head of the table or the leadership or the baton or the gavel.
Right, and you know, if you just look going back to the election again, and you look what Hillary went through, and you look what Sarah Palin went through, you know, and you have young women look at that, and it's like, why would I want to do that?
Right, and I was wondering if women still aren't even providing the support to the women who get out there. Like, I'm wondering how many women voters really wanted to see a woman become president as deeply, perhaps, as African Americans wanted.
Well, I think this last election really proved that women didn't support women as African Americans supported an African American.
Yes, yes. Okay. Anything else on that list?
Wow, it's a great list. Yeah, one other thing I would comment on, you talk about courage, you talk about drinking at dangerous waters, you talk about getting back in the saddle. Regardless of what you do in life, you have to possess your own durability, you know, the personal durability to withstand the highs and lows, and life is never even. You have highs in life and you have lows in life, and you have to be durable to go through it. And it ties in with the comment that you made. Some of the networks that we formed back in the 60s really support women, supported women a lot more so than what I've seen in society today. And part of how I know I developed my own personal durability is what is through the support systems and networks that I had back then.
I would agree with that. That each of us, I call our group the interlopers, who we may have been all alone in the particular arena that we were pushing for opportunity and leadership in, but there was this sense that we were part of something bigger than ourselves, and all around the country there were other women standing all by themselves who were helping move us forward.
Right, and that's missing today. The other thing that I absolutely love on your list when you talk about drinking dangerous waters, getting out of your comfort zone, engaging in the world, I always encourage people to view things through different lenses. So, you know, if you're in China, instead of viewing China through an American lens, view it through the lens of a Chinese, or in America, view America through the lens of a Chinese person, or someone of different faith, or someone with different characteristics, you know, like a differently abled person. So you really grow if you can build the capability to view situations through a different lens.
All right, and finally, I want to ask you about power, and then if there's anything you want to add at the end, feel free to. But this whole question about power and femininity that our culture seems to insinuate is an oxymoron. Do you think that's at play in women's inability or hesitancy to go for it and want it?
Yeah, you know, just again, I'll go back to this campaign, and no one ever talked about McCain's suit or talked about Obama's suit, yet they were obsessed with Hillary's pantsuit or Hillary's clothes or Sarah Palin's wardrobe. You know, so I would have said prior to this campaign, Ann, that, you know, you can be powerful and feminine, but this campaign really challenged some of my opinions of the way things are.
So, it took you to your core.
Yeah, right. They really did. So, you know, myself, I have my own style, and really a friend of mine years ago talked about a model of competence and eccentricity being the more competent you are and the more powerful you are, the more eccentric you can be. So maybe when you first come into an organization, walking in a pink ruffled suit wouldn't give the right level of perception of balancing your competence with your eccentricity. That's pretty eccentric, but, you know, if you basically prove yourself as a world-leading scientist and you come in a pink ruffled suit, nobody looks at you. So, you know, I always believed that there was this balance between competence and eccentricity. But, again, you know, reflecting back some of the events that have happened the past 6 months, you know, maybe there's more to it. I thought it was gone. Maybe it's not.
The tightrope is still pretty thin. that women must walk.
There's a very narrow band of acceptance for a woman. I thought it broadened more than potentially it has.
Okay, this is a fantastic conversation. And is there anything, really a final thought that you want to add?
Yeah, the only thing that I would say is that there still is a lot more work that all of us have to do. You have done so much, both in your professional career from when you started back in broadcasting through your corporate career to what you're doing now. I would absolutely encourage you to get that book written and published.
And, I'm working on it.
and maybe, you know, from that book, all of us should force some dialogue into the Harvard Business Review and other forums to resurge the level of focus on the issue that was out there back in the 60s and early 70s. So somehow we have to figure out how to get these issues back in focus, because I kind of think they're off the table and they have been broomed under the rug.
Yeah, that is great. Ann Stevens, it's always fantastic to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing you again one of these days soon.
Take care, Ann. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye.